We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad that you're listening. And we're also very happy to have back on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape, in the garden, in the house. We can talk about houseplants. You can talk about ornamental things, grass, trees, shrubs, and in all of that, if you're having a problem, she can try to help you out. Maybe you're looking for some suggestions on what you might plant either this fall or next spring. Those questions are all certainly welcome. The number, if you'd like to call us, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. We already have somebody who's ready to go, was waiting through the newscast, so we'll get right to him. And that's someone who is in Piatt County, and line number four.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quickly. I wanted to ask two fast questions, I hope, is that my lavender this year, I ignored it, and it's just gotten huge. And I just wonder for fall, because I know it can die back if you cut it back too closely. But, I mean, these are long lavender strands. Should I cut my lavender back or just leave it really long and shaggy?
Well, you certainly can go ahead and cut back the flower. That's fabulous that it did well, because lavender is kind of a tough one to grow around here. So if you want to go ahead and cut off the old flower stems, I think that's okay. Fine. I wouldn't do a lot of heavy pruning, like into the main stalks. I'd wait until, usually we wait until spring, when it just starts to sort of leaf out, and then you'll know how much to cut back.
Oh, okay. And then I know I just have ignored the answers to this question about I had a poinsettia from Christmas that just went crazy also. And again, all I did was water it, and it's just beautiful, huge, and green. Is there? I know it's difficult to get them to bloom again, but is there any point in trying? I mean, do they put them in the closet or something, I think?
Absolutely. I mean, you certainly can do it. It's possible. Mm-hmm. It is. You have to be somewhat dedicated to it. So depending on how big it is and how easy this is. But generally what we'll do, the 1st of October, they need these short...
Okay.
Yeah. They need short days, long nights. Did I say that right? I always have to think twice
short
about
days,
that.
Short days, long nights?
Yeah.
Long days, short nights.
Now you're confusing me. Stop. They need a long night.
A long night.
Which would make a short day, right? Short day,
I guess.
Stop talking.
It's my
anyway,
show. I'll talk
it is
if I want.
Sorry. I'm sorry. We'll quit quibbling here. So what you need to do is the problem is you have to have it a longer night than what we normally have at that time period. So you need to put it either in a closet, or sometimes you can get away with putting it in like a bedroom or someplace where there's no lights or no outdoor lights or whatever. But then you have to make sure it has light during the day. So you can't just like stuff it in the closet and forget about it for a couple months. So you have to do this in and out kind of thing. So however you can do it, or you can cover it up if you have some way to cover it. Mm-hmm. So that it does have those long long nights. Short days.
I'm not saying anything.
I know. I confuse myself. I don't need help having me confused. So does that make sense?
It does.
Now that I've totally...
The normal temperatures, I mean like a house temperature?
Yeah. Typically it'd be about 65 or so. Okay. So we don't want it terribly hot, but for most of our homes, that's probably about right anyway. So it's really how much light they get at night. They need an uninterrupted long night. So no turning on the light at night, none of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Sure. Good luck.
All right. Thank you. And other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. You know, something that's really cool about lavender, now maybe everybody knows this, but something I think I learned from listening to Diane Nolan, is that you can get your lavender to thicken up and branch out if you take a sprig of it and just sort of bend it over, whatever you have to do, and make it have contact with the soil. And you may need to use something to kind of pin it down to hold it there. But what will happen there is it'll root. And then that way, maybe you have a little clump of it, you can get your clump to be bigger and have new growth simply by taking the existing stuff and just making it so that it will touch the soil and leave it there with soil contact.
That's great.
And I think that's just the coolest thing.
Yeah, and it's fairly easy to do, but
yeah.
But lavender is one of those tough ones because it needs really good drainage in the wintertime. And that's usually when it dies over the winter. It's not because it's too cold. It's just because it's too wet. So you really, really have to have a well-drained spot. And the best place I ever put lavender was where I actually had an old sidewalk. So it was almost with a sand base. It was brick with a sand base.
I have a place just like that in my front yard.
So if it's almost all sand, that's a perfect place to think about putting
lavender.
And
that's just right. And it's a place where some big pavers had been laid.
Sure.
And where they prepped it. By mixing some sand in. So right at the edge, it's kind of sandy. Other things don't like it, but the lavender really likes it there. And I guess I always suspected that the sidewalk also acted as a kind of a heat sink.
Sure.
And so it kept it maybe a little bit warmer. But that's been a perfect spot for lavender.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of those you don't want to mulch with wood chip mulch. That's the other thing. We're so used to chipping everything. Lavender, you never want to do that. If you're going to mulch it, you actually ought to mulch it either with pea gravel or sand itself or something like that, because you're really trying to sort of mimic those conditions of sort of that Mediterranean kind of climate. So it's kind of hot and dry, but yet, yeah. So,
okay. Very good. Mm-hmm. The callers here, we have several, and we'll go to the first in line here now is somebody in Champaign in line number one. Hello.
Yes, I have a hydrangea that's gotten out of hand, but I'm not sure about trimming it because I'm concerned about cutting off whatever's supposed to have the new blossoms next year.
Mm-hmm. So do you know what kind it is, what
no,
the name
I
is?
No, I don't.
Yeah. So is it a pink-blue one of those?
Right.
It's supposed
right,
to be pink, it was supposed to be blue. So, and you don't remember, it's like not like Endless Summer or some of those, a newer variety? Or
it blooms earlier in the year.
Okay. Well, since we don't really know for sure, the problem is with hydrangeas is, depending on which one it is, a lot of the pink and blue ones bloom on old wood. So you're absolutely right to be concerned about pruning that off because you don't want to prune that off.
The dead canes you don't want to prune off?
Correct.
Okay.
Because that's where the flower buds are going to be for next year.
Okay.
So to be on the safe side, I wouldn't do a whole lot of that heavy pruning. Typically, we'd probably do it right after they flower. And is it still flowering for you? Is it still flowering?
No.
Pretty well done.
It's done, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I could prune green stalks that were over long or thin those out but leave the dead canes?
No. Any of the old wood, as in the wood that was produced this year, that's they call it old wood because next year it'll be last year's wood. Does that make sense? Now I'm really confusing everybody.
I guess so.
so they call it old wood because they actually bloom on any stems that were there the year before.
Okay.
So has it bloomed well for you? Typically?
On and off, and I've trimmed it on and off
different times,
and mostly not at all because I'm fearful of doing it wrong.
Right. So usually, what we'd want to do with those that bloom on old wood, which we have to kind of assume that with this one, is to only prune it right after it flowers, right after it blooms. So we're getting kind of late here. I'm not sure how much pruning you want to do.
Okay.
So the old canes or the old dead things are just, if they happen to be dead, you can certainly remove those. But I wouldn't do a lot of heavy pruning on the canes that are there now.
Okay.
Right. So if we knew, there are some newer ones like Endless Summer that actually bloom on old wood and new wood both. So it doesn't really matter when you prune them. A lot of the white ones aren't a big deal and they usually bloom on the new wood. So if you prune them anytime, doesn't really matter.
And if you're saying you bloom them right after they bloom, then what would you be pruning at that point?
You're pruning back the stems. I assume you're trying to make them shorter.
Right. You would prune
the ones that had just flowered, those stems
that
just flowered. Yep.
On them.
Yep. Then you just prune those back.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. Let's see. Next, we'll go to another Champaign person. This is line two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have several forsythia bushes in my yard, and I lost one last year. Looks like some kind of insect got into it and just destroyed it. And now three of the forsythia are doing the same thing. Is there something that I can do that's safe for my dog to be around? Because she eats everything she comes in contact with.
Labrador, right?
No, German Shepherd.
Oh, okay. I thought only labs did that. So you have a forsythia, and the branches or the stems are dying back?
Yeah, they just turn brown. They first start losing leaves, and then the whole stem turns brown.
Okay, and then does it, if you sort of rock it back and forth, does this kind of pop off?
Yeah.
Okay, you're probably getting root rot or collar rot.
Oh.
Yeah, it's probably more of a rot issue is my guess. And certainly we've had sort of conditions, actually last year and even to some extent this year, we had it kind of set the stage where we had particularly last year, we hit where it was so wet for long periods of time, and even areas that would normally be well drained were actually still wet. So I wonder if it, is this a site that could have gotten a little extra, you know, ever have any standing water or anything in that area?
Well,
or?
I know my yard is intensely clay.
Yeah, yeah. So I have a feeling, especially when they pop off like that, when they sort of just like they're rotten at the stem. And you could do a little investigation now, but I'd almost bet you've gotten some collar rot in there. And it just sort of set the stage as a fungal disease, but it sort of set the stage by being too wet in that area. So I have a feeling it's really more an environmental thing, and but I wouldn't hold a whole lot of hope for that particular plant to continue to survive.
Okay.
So you may want to think about a new plant. And again, it was sort of that perfect storm where we had a bunch of things going on at the same time. But if there's some way you can actually, if you can plant them on just a little bit of a mound, you know, you still want the roots covered, but just a little bit of mound, sometimes that's enough to get that collar up out of the water if there's particularly a lot of water. And it sounds like with your clay, you might have that issue a lot. So you might want to think about that, but I'd almost bet you're probably going to have to replace the plant. And I don't think there's a whole lot of other than just looking for the well-drained soil that you're going to have to do.
Okay. Yeah, these are at the bottom of the yard, so I'm sure that they're just goners.
A little too wet. Yeah, I had some lilac bushes that I had had for over 10 years, and they just upped and died. That's it. They just died last year, and it was in an area that had just stayed a little wet too long and even had some standing water, which I never had standing water before. So even mature plants can die from those kind of things.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you. And we'll go over to Terre Haute for the next person here, line four. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
I got an angel wing begonia. What do I do to make it bloom?
It's not blooming for you at all? Usually they're pretty prolific bloomers.
Well, that's what I always thought, but this one won't bloom.
Now, when you say angel wing, it has the green leaf kind of with the little reddish maybe on it or is
right.
it? Right. Because it's not one that's got a lot of purple and silver and all that kind of stuff in it, because those typically don't really flower much.
Now, I've repotted that and it bloomed once and it hadn't bloomed since.
And you have it outside, I assume?
No.
Okay. So it's indoors?
Indoors.
Okay. Is there a place where you can get a bit more light?
I've got it in the living room window, which would be the south window.
Right, right.
It's a big picture window.
Right, right. Well, it could be usually even in shadier environments, they usually go ahead and flower, but that's maybe why it's not quite so vigorous as if it was outside. So definitely they need well-drained soil, so it seems like it's growing okay. It's just not flowering.
It's growing good.
Oh, so it's growing well. So it could be a matter of light issues, and that may be one of those things where it just don't flower as well indoors as they would outdoors. So I don't know for the next, you know, you certainly could, I don't know if you have a place to put it outside for the next month before it freezes, but you might encourage some flowers that way. Or even get if you have like a supplemental light somehow. You know, there's plenty of the bulbs now that you can, you know, that really work out well in a number of fixtures. If there's some way you could give it a little extra light, even with a little artificial light like that.
Would you
is that
put
possible?
It on the north side or the south side of the house? Or?
No, the south side's good because typically that's where we'd get most of our sun. So that's good. I mean, it sounds like you've gotten the best place you could in your home. It just, I have a feeling it's just not quite enough light to get flowers off of it. But the leaves are pretty.
Yeah.
It might be one of those things. Or I would just really consider, if you want to, I would consider some supplemental light, like you have a reading light or something like that you could put near it to give it some more light. You might try that. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right, very good. Good luck with that. Our guest this morning in this hour focus is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. So if you have some questions about things that grow around the home landscape, it could be outside, could be houseplants, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. So we were talking here. You came in. You said you'd been getting a lot of questions about from people who are really concerned about their lawns and how bad they looked.
Yeah, it seems to be this camaraderie. Everybody has a lousy lawn this year, pretty much. And it was, talking to Dr. Tom Boyd over at the U of I, he said, it was one of those situations where it just, a lot of things happened in that, you know, we had a pretty good June, you know, plenty of moisture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of the long grasses, they really just didn't need much effort to go ahead and put out extra roots, or they just weren't encouraged to put out a lot of extra roots that had plenty of moisture at the top surface. So then when we got into that warmer, hotter, drier environments, they really didn't have the root system. So a lot of our good grass just really didn't have the good root system to really take off and really survive that really hot, dry time. Because typically it'd go dormant anyway. It'd go brown, but it wouldn't die. Well, this year, a lot of the grass just went ahead and died. And then the other perfect storm was this crabgrass. Talking to Dr. Boyd, he was saying this is, after 20-some years, this is one of the worst years he's ever seen for crabgrass. Mm. It's just, again, it was one of those situations where typically one application of, say, a pre-emergent herbicide would have been just fine. You'd had plenty of control. But this year, probably two applications would have been necessary because it just continued to go ahead and germinate, started germinating early, and then continued through there. So it's just one of those situations. So people are just, but the good news is it's a great time to think about redoing your lawn. So that's the good news. It's a perfect time to go ahead and start reseeding or overseeding, thicken up the lawn. And that's really the thing to concentrate on. And don't worry quite so much about the crabgrass. We'll worry about that next year.
I wonder if some people, if they really have bad dead patches, if they are thinking more than they've ever thought before, wondering, well, is that a grub? Could that possibly be a grub thing? And I know, you know, we've talked about it, and Phil has been on here, and he said, look, before you even think about doing any treatment, you got to make sure that that's what it is.
Right.
So you can, the thing is, you got to, you know, get out there, take something like a little sharp knife, and you got to cut the turf, and you got to pull it back so you can look. And if there are grubs there, assuming that there are enough of them, then you say, okay, that's what it is.
Right.
But I guess I'm just wondering, could you have some really bad, some particularly bad isolated patches? And that's all it was. It's because it was so hot and so dry.
Absolutely.
And not, you know, it was not grubs at all.
Yeah. Because I've talked to numerous people where they said, well, the grass is still alive in the areas where it's getting a little shade. Well, yeah, it's getting a little shade, so it didn't need quite the amount of moisture. And so we're seeing some of those things. And it's probably not, even though people are thinking maybe they're fungal diseases or whatever, it certainly could be, but it's probably not. And it's one of those situations where by the time we see something, we think it's a fungal disease, it's too late to do any spraying anyway. Yeah. So I think that's the big thing, is that don't spend a lot of time spraying for a fungus disease, you know, this late in the season. Really think about encouraging good growth of the grass that you have and overseeding or seeding those areas and getting something going there. And if you're not seeing your lawn start to green up, and what I've been telling people is that, you know, water it really well. Give it a few days. We've got excellent temperatures right now. If you don't start seeing some life out of the good grass, it's probably not coming back. So, you know, that's one indication that maybe it's time to go ahead and reseed or even resod if you wanted to.
Okay. On again, two callers. And Urbana, line one. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I live in southeast Urbana, and the city planted a katsura tree on the edge of street side.
Mm-hmm.
About 3 or 4 years ago. And this year, the katsura leaves were very brown at the edges and curling up during the rainy season, before the dry season set in.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time, years ago, when I owned a katsura on another property in the same neighborhood, I took those leaves to the extension service, and they told me, well, that looks like 2,4-D damage. But nobody uses that anymore on lawns, and I know that my neighbors don't do anything like that. So can you give me another reason why a reasonably new and until this year healthy katsura tree would suddenly start losing its leaves in the middle of the season?
Well, they certainly are very sensitive. Katsuras are one of those trees that is very sensitive to water issues. And actually, the first few years I have one myself. And the first few years, it really is very sensitive to water, as in it needs plenty of it. Now, I know you said this happened actually before that, but there certainly could be some issues where it's just not well established. And it just seems like from what I've seen with katsura trees, they take a few years to really get established. And mine this year, I actually have two of them. They dropped their leaves really early. So I knew they were under a certain amount of stress because of how dry August was. They need a lot of moisture. So I just think it's probably one of those issues. It's a new tree. It's still getting established. Typically browning around around the edges wouldn't be a 2,4-D kind of thing that we would assume. We usually get other symptoms for if it happened to be a 2,4-D injury. So I doubt if that's what's going on, but I'd almost bet it's more of an issue of just the tree isn't established well, and it just happens to be one of those that takes a while for it to get established.
So would you recommend something like a bucket of water every week?
I would certainly, if it, absolutely. I mean, it'd be something to talk to the city arborist about because it is a city tree.
I think we're responsible for its maintenance. I think that was part of the contract.
Oh, okay. Well, certainly watering it, because you said, now, when was this planted? Just a couple.
Well, it was planted about no more than 3 or 4
years
ago.
So it's still, for cat surgeries, they're just really slow to get established.
Mm.
And it definitely would be one of those, I'd really watch how much water. We haven't had a decent amount of rain here for a while, so if we don't get some this week, I'd really think about watering it.
Yeah.
And just try to maintain. I assume there's mulch around it. Is it mulched?
Yes, I mulch it every year, and there's no grass all the way up to it. There's
also
a linden tree just further down, and that seems to be doing okay this year.
Yeah. I just have a feeling that it's probably more of an environmental kind of thing going on, because we wouldn't typically think of cats as having a lot of leaf disease issues and those kind of things, too. So.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Uh-huh, sure.
All right, well, thank you. This is a tree that I was not familiar with. It looks like it's actually looks like a pretty tree. It looks like it would be really
pretty.
Nice in the autumn when the leaves change.
Yeah, they're very pretty. There's some beautiful specimens on the west side of Freer Gym, if anybody's ever on campus. They're off of Goodwin, and just some beautiful trees. It'd be one of those where, you know, it's probably the sort of medium-sized tree.
Mm-hmm.
They just have a very delicate look to them. So I like them because of that. They have a leaf that looks very similar to a redbud tree, if you like that kind of heart-shaped leaf.
Uh-huh.
So they're very pretty, but they do have that little bit of finickiness getting established. They really hate droughts. Those kind of things.
That's
so,
what this particular article says. It's nice. It's a fast-growing tree, but it's very sensitive to drought. Needs deep, permanently moist soil.
So they have issues that way, but it's certainly something looking in. We like to get a lot of diversity out there in our urban forest, and that's certainly one way to do that.
Sure. Okay. Kokomo, Indiana. That's the next caller here on the toll-free line. Line 4. Hello.
Yes. I have 2 questions. We have some peonies that bloomed well this summer and then all of a sudden developed a bad case of powdery mildew.
Mm-hmm.
We sprayed them with a milk solution, which was supposed to help, but didn't. I'd like to know what you recommend on that. And the second question is, what do you recommend to eradicate wild violet in a lawn? Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, peonies, I love peonies, but they do have a certain amount of disease problems. Powdery mildew is one of those. The problem is when we see these diseases on peonies, and for a lot of plants, usually by the time we see it, it's really kind of too late to do any fungicide sprays. And so that's one of those catch-22s. So it may be one of those things where you just have to think, you know, it usually doesn't kill the plant, but they kind of look unsightly. So you kind of have to decide. So first thing I do is just good sanitation, getting rid of all that old foliage, because the fungus will actually hang out on those old leaves. So getting those out of there so that when the peony does emerge next spring, it's not actually coming up through all that already diseased stuff. So good sanitation is always important. Get the stuff out of there. You may want to think about a fungicide program if you want to go that route. Again, we have to do it before the disease occurs. So that's kind of one of the issues there. So it'd be one of those things where you actually would do a fungicide spray when the stems are about 4 inches tall, and then again when they're about 8 inches tall. So you'd actually probably do like 3 sprays to help protect the leaves. And so that's, you kind of have to decide if that's a route you want to go or not. But it's one of those that unfortunately you have to do it before the disease.
Yeah.
So that's one of the problems. Wild violets on the lawn, violets, yeah. David loves violets. He loves violets. Of course,
I'm
have a shady area, so
well,
violets
yes.
love your area.
That's a particular problem. In my yard particularly, there are some places that are very shady, and so we got big issues with violets and creeping Charlie and
everything
that does well in shade. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So it's one of those, if you have really large plants, and I don't know if you would necessarily in the lawn, but typically what you're going to have to do is that what I've found is that most of the herbicides don't do a particularly good job on the mature plants if they're really big. I assume in the lawn you're probably mowing them, so maybe they're not quite as mature, but if you have a seed source or something, some area where they're getting mature, a lot of the herbicides just don't work all that well, so you're really going to have to just dig them out, but they're easy to dig. In the lawn area, usually any of the broadleaf type weed killers like 2,4-D, those kind of products usually do a pretty good job, but you're probably going to have to do more than one application. So you just read the label. And this is actually a pretty good time when we start getting into even October is a pretty good time to be doing herbicide applications on a lot of the lawn type weeds, the ones that are perennial. Hmm. So it's not too late yet to do it this year. So usually, but it's more than one, you're probably going to have to spray more than one time. So maybe this fall and then again next spring.
Okay. Cook County is next. Line number four, right here. Hello.
Yes, hi. I got a couple, three questions. One concerns an old oak tree I have in my front yard. It's got to be at least four or five stories high. This year, the leaves were somewhat stunted and curled at the beginning of spring, and I noticed a good number of branches didn't produce any leaves. And it looks like it's dying, and I wonder if I should cut off some of the branches that look like they're dying.
So what kind of oak tree is this?
I'm not sure. It's one of those kind of oak trees one sees all over Cook County. It's pretty old.
So does it have, are there points at the ends of the leaf, or is it rounded at the ends of the leaf? Have you noticed?
I did notice. I think there are points.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is there are certain diseases, and some of them are common within the sort of red oak group, which are the ones that have little points at the ends of the leaves, as opposed to the white oak, which are bur oaks, white oaks, and those are rounded at the ends of the leaf. There certainly could be some, with an older tree. Is this an area, I assume, where was there a house built recently or within the last few years?
The house is 60 years old.
Oh, okay, so it's been there a long time. Okay, because oaks are sensitive to root injury through construction and some of those kind of things. So it doesn't sound like that's probably what's going on. They do get, there actually are a couple different diseases, and it'd be worth investigating on those. And certainly if it's in that red oak group, I don't know if you can get a sample or if there's some way you can take it into your local extension office or contact your local extension office to see about having somebody take a look at the tree, as in a sample of the tree.
By sample, you mean leaf or
twig sample? Yeah, I know it's probably really hard to get some kind of a twig sample off of it. But are there numerous oaks in that area? Or
oh yeah, it's all over.
Yeah, yeah. There because there is actually an oak wilt, which can be really serious within the red oak group. It would be really worth it to find out if that's what the issue is, because it can actually spread from tree to tree through root grafts. So it definitely be something you need to investigate. So you may have to actually get an arborist or somebody else to get a sample for you, and yes, definitely investigate it further just for the health of the other trees that are nearby as well.
Another question involves another tree. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's in the townhouse subdivision my mother lives in, and it's small foliage, reddish, long, elongated leaves. It seems to lose its leaves very quickly. I was wondering if it's sick. Can't really tell you more than that. I see them all over the subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
I have them in sort of good-looking small trees.
With red leaves.
Well, purplish red.
The only thing I can think of, there are some purple-leaf plums and some of those ornamental. Does it have flowers in the spring, do you know? Or
No, it's an ornamental tree, for sure.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what it is, simply because I'm not sure, since we don't know what the plant is. But it, there's a lot of reasons why things may lose their leaves. Does it leaf out then again next spring?
Yes.
So it seems that
less and less, but yes.
Oh, so some of the branches are actually dying back? Okay, so that's, again, one of those that probably need to investigate further, and it would help to know what kind of plant it is, but I have a feeling it might be one like the purple-leaf plums or, some of those kind of ornamental kind of plums that we see out there in cherries. There's actually some ornamental cherries that are like that, too, and they do get some canker diseases, and they get a few different diseases. They're not particularly long-lived plants, but, again, since we don't know exactly what it is, but it'd be worth investigating.
So I should investigate the oak in particular before I lop off any large branches.
I would really, simply because of the nature of what could be a disease that could be really a big issue in that if you have multiple red oaks in that area.
Lastly, just very quickly, general knowledge, should I trim back my evergreen bushes at particular times of year, such as late fall as opposed to spring?
You know, it really sort of depends on when you have a chance. I wouldn't do any heavy pruning like this time of year, but usually we probably end up doing it in the spring or, you know, and it depends on what you're doing. I assume these are like evergreen shrubs of some sort. They're not necessarily the trees. Okay. And just to realize that depending on what you're pruning back, like arborvitaes and some of those, they don't leaf out well if you get into sort of the brown zone area where there isn't a lot of green needles there. So just remember not to prune back too much on some of those. Okay?
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thank you. I have an email here from someone who is wanting to know if you have ever seen a lawn that was damaged by chinch bugs. Do you know the chinch?
You know, I've heard of chinch bugs, but I, to be honest with you, I don't know that much about them.
The story says, the listener says, the grass in their front lawn all died in June and July for the second year in a row. And she said that earlier on, the grass had in the spring, the grass had been looking good. But it all died and all the weeds were left. And she said she consulted a book, the Ortho Problem Solver book, and the picture that most closely resembled the damage attributes it to chinch bugs.
I'm guessing they're not that common here. I don't know. Have you ever
I've never heard of them. I was just reading up on it.
I have not seen a big issue. You know, I've just never seen. We certainly see a lot of other problems. We saw sod webworms this year, which we typically didn't see. So I think sometimes with some of the books, what the issue ends up being is that they're more common in certain areas than ours. So I'm just not so sure about how common chinch bugs are in our area. Again, it's not one of those worth investigating. The lawns are actually kind of tough in some respects because there's a lot of things that look similar
mm-hmm.
Because they don't have, you know, obviously because of the leaves being the way they are.
So I guess that the question is you really have to get a good identification to know, well, okay, what is the issue? And then if that's what the problem is, that what the reference that I'm consulting says that in many cases they say chemical control is not necessary and that, in fact, studies have shown that laws that were well watered throughout the summer were able to tolerate relatively high populations of these things. So it's possible that if conditions were really dry and the lawn was not in great shape, maybe that might have had something to do with it. And it also says that what you can do is if you look at the places where there's been damage and then look not in the place where the grass is clearly dead, but you look over kind of at the edges, you should actually be able to see them because it says that they're usually very active in the summertime. So if you look, you'll be able to see them scurrying around, it says, especially on warm days. So I guess the question is, well, you've got to know what it is. So if you can find them and put them in something, then
bring them to us.
Bring them to you or take them to somebody who can actually identify what it is, and then you can go to your control from there.
Right.
But it sounds like if you had an issue like this where someone said, well, look, my lawn, earlier in the spring it was looking fine, but then once we got into summer, it just died out. And this it didn't just happen this summer. It also happened last summer. Does that make you think, well, it's more than just heat and stress from drought, and it might actually be something else?
Absolutely. It could be something else, but it could also be the site. You know, what's the soil type like? How compacted is the soil? How is the area prepared before it was seeded? You know, there's a lot of environmental things that can be pretty site-specific or you end up having an issue with that particular area. So you always also have to just rule out, is there something going on with that particular area? What's the soil like? You know, those kind of things before we start looking at some of these others. But absolutely, you kind of have to look at everything. And that's a good, you know, what you mentioned too, is that, you know, if you're looking for an insect thing, don't look in the dead stuff. You look where it's still green, because they're not going to be in the dead stuff. They're going to be where they actually can still feed.
Yeah.
So looking at those outer edges can be helpful too. So.
And it sounds like maybe for a problem like this, if you were going to look for it, you'd have to look for it much earlier rather than at the point where maybe all the damage was done already.
Right.
Well, I know we've been no help at all.
No help whatsoever. No. But what they can do is I'd be glad to research this further. So if they want to, you know, contact me at the Champaign County Extension Office, I'd be glad to research it further and maybe get some other ideas on. I just, in my 20-some years of being an extension, chinch bugs has not been on the radar
okay.
in lawns.
Well, okay. We'll leave it at that and go on to somebody in Champaign. And line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm calling. I've got a question and a small problem. And the question is, I have a pot of strawberry plants, and is there anything I can do to have them, to encourage them to regenerate themselves if I bring them indoors?
Yeah. You know, the only thing is, so I assume these are just regular strawberries. These are not ornamental strawberries. These are just ones you're trying to get fruit off of. And
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, they need to go through a cold period is the only thing. So to try to grow them, yeah, you really can't grow them like houseplants.
Okay. Well, I can't put them in the refrigerator. I suppose I'll better wait for the cold period.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you could put it in a protected area, like if you had a garage or someplace like that where it gets cool and not necessarily, you know, freezes. Because when you get them in those small pots, it's really hard to keep them alive. It tends to freeze and thaw a lot. They dry out, and there's a lot of issues. Unfortunately, strawberries have a really fibrous root system. They dry out really fast. And so sometimes it's really hard in those pots to keep them going.
So it's a question of maybe keeping them cold for a couple of months and then trying maybe bringing them into
Yeah, they need to go through a cold period. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now here's the problem that I have. I have a small grape arbor, which I planted is on a trellis next to my deck, and I get grapes all the time. I've gotten them, but the most unusual thing that they don't ripen by the bunch. You get one or two grapes at a time. I've never had a grape arbor where that has happened. You usually get a whole bunch at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Have any feeling about why that would happen?
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to use herbicides on your lawn or?
No, not so much. You think that's
like, sometimes grapes are very sensitive to 2,4-D injury, which would be our typical broadleaf weed killer. And that actually can cause an uneven ripening sometimes if they get a little. You'd probably see some kind of indication on the leaves as well. They usually start to curl a little bit, and you see some indication that they've had some kind of herbicide drip. But their grapes are very sensitive to 2,4-D injury. So that would be one thing. I'm not sure what else. They don't seem to be rotting, or because sometimes you'll get some fungal diseases that'll cause that kind of thing too.
Yeah.
So it's just that uneven ripening. I'm not sure about that one.
The roots are very near a septic tank. I don't know if that has anything.
Yeah,
to
I wouldn't think
not.
That. I think that'd
I
be a good thing.
Might,
I think that would be a good thing, not a bad thing. You know, that would be one of those things. And actually, if you watch Illinois Gardener and WILL, and Dr. Bob Skirvin is on, that would be a really good question for him.
Okay,
excellent question.
Very good. Illinois Gardener.
Yeah, Illinois Gardener. Bob Skirvin is our fruit guy, and he would certainly have a lot of experience in that.
And that's Thursdays at 7 o'clock.
Thursdays at 7 o'clock, and I'm not sure when he's going to be on
7
next.
7 o'clock. Is that on the weekends then? Or?
It's Thursday nights on 7 o'clock on our TV station, WILL. It's a live show, so you can call in with questions. But every week, the list of panelists is different, so it's always changing. Sometimes Sandy is on the show, other people from the university, from various kinds of landscaping and plant places around the area. So it's always a different crew, but it's a live show. And like this show, people like to call in with questions. And it's one of the most popular things we've ever done on WILO.
Okay. Well, thank you for informing me.
Sure.
Okay.
Very good.
Good luck.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and we're taking questions on lawn and garden care. And it's something that we do here once a month, always on a Tuesday. 333-9455. Toll free. 222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. So we're kind of getting to the end of the growing season here, but maybe it would be worth mentioning that if people are thinking about it, there are still, and I guess I'm thinking of stuff you can eat, there are still some things that you can plant and you can get edible crops, a few things, even now between now and the time that we have frost.
Yeah, really a lot of the leafy type crops, you know, spinach and, you know, lettuce and stuff. There's a lot of things actually tolerate frost or actually even get better once they're frosted. And one of the things that's gotten to be a little bit more popular is that these things called floating row covers, I don't know, or frost covers sometimes they're called. But it's kind of this spun bond material that you actually can put over plants. And it'll give you like 5-degree difference between, and that can make a big difference. And so you can actually stretch it longer. I had spinach in December last year. Just by covering it. So, and it's I'm truly amazed on how some of the crops are so frost tolerant, how well they'll take a little cold injury, and they're fine. Mm-hmm. Broccoli and some of those kind of things.
That's still it's amazingly cool just to be able to go out into your garden and pick something.
Great?
It really is a really great,
great
thing.
And that's just a material that you can actually just lay on top of the plants, or you can just put a little cover, a little frame of pipe or whatever to sort of keep it a little bit above them. But it really does help, and that 5-degree difference is often just enough to get them through, you know, several months.
And we can still be planting perennials now?
This is a great time to be thinking about planting perennials. Usually they're on sale this time of year, yeah. So that's the good news.
Yep.
And then the other thing is just the fact that it's a good time to divide them. It's the only time we recommend that you divide peonies. So if you're going to be moving peonies around or dividing them, September is the only time we recommend that. So this, to me, I always think of September as sort of that last, you know, that last bit of enthusiasm that we can do all the things that we didn't get around to in the spring. So it's just a great opportunity and good weather. Get out there.
Well, and,
yeah,
and particularly this summer, it's been really warm. So
yeah,
August was really hot. So now the temperatures have moderated, and hopefully we'll get into some nice weather here. So if you want to be doing things outside, it's a much nicer time to be doing it.
Perfect.
Okay. Several callers here. We'll get them all in, I'm sure, and we'll try. Starting with Arcola. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have three quick questions, and then I'll hang up.
Okay.
Number one, peonies. Do you cut those back even if they're not showing signs of any diseases? Two, irises. I have several clumps in various locations in my garden, and they have iris borers. Am I going to need to just get rid of all the irises I have while those borers continue to spread? And three, the last caller reminded me of my grape question. I've been growing grapes for 4 years and have never had grapes produced. 1 year, they all came on really strong. I had the most magnificent showing of tiny little clusters of grapes. They all died and fell off, and I've never had one edible grape in 4 to 5 years of growing. So I'll hang up and listen to the answer on the radio.
All right.
Okay. So it's no, and I'm sorry about the grapes. So peonies, you generally, and this is true for all perennials, if they still look nice and healthy, don't cut the foliage off, because as long as the foliage is there, then it's able to produce food and more food reserves to make it through the winter and to do better next year. So you always only leave the green stuff on, unless it's obviously dead or dying or whatever. So leave the green stuff on all your perennials. The other thing with the irises, iris borer is certainly a big issue. And what I would do is go ahead and dig up those. And you can actually do a pretty good job of removing the rhizomes that are obviously diseased or had the borer in them, because you usually get a bacterial soft rot that's with them, too. This is really gross. So you get rid of all that stuff, replant them, and you should be in pretty good shape. I'd also cut back the foliage to about 6 inches and really think about redoing that. We typically probably would have done that in August, is when we usually mess around with the bearded irises, but I don't think you're going to be too late now. So I just do some major cleanup, sanitation kinds of stuff, and then just go from there. But I think you'll be able to save your irises. As far as the grapes go, I imagine it's probably a fungal disease, because they get botrytis, and there's a couple other diseases that actually can make those fruits actually fall off early. So it'd be one of those things to really do a little investigation. Make sure you're doing plenty of pruning so they get plenty of good air circulation, and that may help just by making sure you do plenty of pruning on the grapes as well.
And does Extension have a publication on growing grapes? I know that they do on growing small fruit.
Yes, if you call your local Extension office, use it under the county name or under University of Illinois, and they can give you information on what you would spray, how you'd spray, those kind of things. But they can certainly do a little bit more investigation, too, on why those might be falling off. But I have a feeling it's a fungal disease.
Okay.
Well, I think we covered it.
I think we did it. And, okay, let's go to Basotum. Line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I have, first time I've planted cannas and callas and elephant ear. And I think it said you're supposed to lift them before the first frost. So what do? Cut them all back and then or is there some kind of publication I need to look at to see how to properly do it? Because I guess you're supposed to take them inside because they're not winter hardy.
Yeah, they're not hardy. But I always love that, before the first frost. Well, who knows when the first frost is going to be? I think that's really a tough thing to tell people. Sort of like at 10 o'clock at night, you're out there running and digging stuff up. So I wouldn't get too nervous about the first frost thing. You don't want them to go through a hard freeze. That's the big thing. So we're talking about once we get into October, then it gets more and more iffy that we're going to have a pretty good frost. So I think about that first week of October is to go ahead and dig them. them. And what you're going to do, you're going to dig them up. And I usually just leave the foliage on and let it just die down naturally, even once I've dug them. So I sort of dig them. And then you're just going to put them in. For most of those things, you can pretty well just put them in a paper bag. You can put them in plastic. Just make sure they don't stay too wet. If you don't let the soil dry properly, sometimes they'll get a little too wet. And then you want to put them in a protected area. And, you know, the ideal thing would be about 55 degrees. But, you know, I know that's really tough. So find a place somewhere, if you have crawl space, somewhere it's where it's not going to freeze, but yet it's still a little bit cooler than that. So if you can get kind of that spot, a basement, area of the garage, someplace like that where it's not going to freeze, and then you just sort of forget about them until spring.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. So
pretty easy.
So you don't cut them back for you dig them up and then let the foliage.
That's what I do, because as long as there's foliage on there, it actually can go ahead and replenish the bulb or rhizome or whatever it happens to be for that plant. So I generally do that. Some people go ahead and just cut it off, but I usually just let it just die down natural and then store them away.
Okay. And then the elephant ear, there's nothing special, because that was
it's
such
just
a big
old. Yeah. Big. It's just a big old bulb, and you'll probably find a whole bunch of other ones there with it. You'll find a bunch of little babies, which you can save, too. Yeah.
I always loved it, and it's done so well, and so I hated
dig them up.
No, just dig them up, let them die back, and I've got a perfect place to store them.
There
great.
You go. All right, good.
Love your show.
Sure.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to another caller, Mount Zion here, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
We have a long driveway. And we're wanting to plant some kind of a screen, a fire stick screen. There are power lines above it, and it's only about 12 feet wide. We're thinking about evergreen of some kind. What would you recommend there? It's next to a cornfield also, so that could be a problem.
Yeah. Well, we don't have a whole lot of choices in that realm, to be honest with you. Probably arborvitae is probably going to be about your best bet, because they tend to stay nice and narrow, but yet, you know, they'll probably top out at maybe 12 to 15 feet tall. So I wouldn't think it'd be an issue, obviously, if you're a power line, too. So we just don't have a whole lot of options, unfortunately, when it comes to something narrow, evergreen, and yet tall. So, and there's a number of arborvitae out there that are, I think there's emerald green. There's a bunch of different ones out there now that are really pretty nice.
Are they pretty low maintenance?
Yeah, the only thing with arborvitaes, no plant is perfect, but the only thing with arborvitaes, you do sometimes get bagworms, so you will have to sort of look, you know, it's one of those things, just sort of scouting periodically and make sure you don't have bagworms on them. That would probably be the biggest thing is bagworms.
Okay. Are they long-lived?
Yeah, they're really, you know, you can have them I would put them in the long-lived category as far as shrubs go. I mean, they're certainly no less than any of the other ones. So that's fine. I that would be my choice one, especially when you don't have a very wide space. It's about your only choice.
And the cornfield spray herbicides wouldn't affect them too much?
It shouldn't be a big issue, because obviously they should be spraying when it's not all that terribly windy. Probably the only thing is I would just really watch how much you water them. They are a little sensitive to drying out too much in a really windy site. So when you do plant them, just make sure that you give them adequate water. Don't let them dry out too much simply because of wind. I'd be more concerned about the wind issues.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, I have another email here from someone who has questioned about aphids. She says that she has some jasmine bushes that are in pots, and she's had them for 30 years, and they're beautiful, and this year they bloom really nicely, and she brings them inside.
Mm-hmm.
By about the middle of October, every year she brings them inside. Well, apparently the problem is that she's got a lot of aphids on these plants, and she wants to know what she could do to get rid of them, I'm sure, presumably before they come inside. What can she do?
Well, aphids are actually one of those things that just a heavy stream of water actually does a pretty good job of getting rid of a lot of aphids. They don't hang on very well, and they don't get back up very well. So a heavy stream of water, and that's probably a good thing to do anytime you're bringing a plant back into your home, is just do a good heavy stream of water, just clean it off really well. And then what you could do after that is to go ahead and use something like insecticidal soap, which is actually pretty safe product. Use it according to label directions, and it's very effective on soft-bodied insects like that, like aphids. So, and that'd be one of those things to just sort of, I'd probably do that after, let it dry a little bit and then do that.
Yeah. And then how long would you need to wait before you then you could figure that they were dead and you could bring the plant in? Or would that be real obvious because you wouldn't see any?
Yeah, hopefully you wouldn't see him. But it sounded like she would do it now and she doesn't bring it in until October. She'd have a few weeks to see if maybe she needs to spray it again before she actually brings it in. So I'd probably wait a week or so after you spray, see if you got a few more coming in, then spray them again. And so it sounds like she'll have plenty of time to do that before she takes it in. So
okay.
Probably a pretty good thing to do with all the tropical plants when you're bringing them in.
Right. So let's go real quick. We could maybe get in at least one call in the time we have left here. We got maybe about a minute or two. Anything last things maybe you'd just like to remind people of at this time?
Well... I think we've talked about a lot of things, but I think just sort of the whole idea is enjoying the fall and actually looking at what plants, we don't always think about fall color, but it is one of those things if you have that choice of, and you're really looking for a certain fall color on a plant and you want to buy it, this is the time to be buying it because even red maples and stuff, they don't always redden up the same. They don't always look the same. So if you're looking for a plant for fall color, this would be the time to buy it. Then you know in the pot, this is the color it's going to be. So it's just one of those things that sometimes we get surprises.
And for now, we've talked before about it's been really warm. It's been warmer than average. Right. It's been really dry. August was really hot and dry. And you can see the stress on a lot of plants because of that. Now, we've kind of turned the corner here. So, excuse me. So at least it's going to be cooler. And if we get normal precepts, things will start to get looking a little better. But now as we're thinking about wanting to make sure that things are healthy when they're going into the winter, is there anything in particular that you should be doing?
Absolutely. I mean, if we don't start getting in some regular rain here, usually we say about an inch of water a week is really what we'd like. So if you have any, especially if you have any trees or shrubs that have been planted within the last 5 years, I'd really be thinking long and hard about making sure that they have adequate moisture. So you may find you have to water. We don't think about watering in September, but you may find you have to do that. You want to make sure things are healthy going into winter. And certainly evergreens are one of those big ones to make sure that they're healthy going into winter. And certainly if you have rhododendrons or anything that maintains its leaves, boxwoods, anything that maintains its leaves through the winter to make sure that it has plenty of moisture in particular. I wouldn't be fertilizing any trees or shrubs at this point necessarily because we want them to slow down. We don't want them to think about putting on a lot of new growth and those kind of things. So I'd be thinking about that. It's a good time to actually plant trees and shrubs. If you've, again, a lot of them are on sale, good time to do it.
But I'm sure that you would say you got to make sure that you water them really well, right at the beginning.
Right, right, absolutely, and just really making sure that things are watered.
An inch a week. Did we get an inch in the entire month of August?
I don't know. I don't think we did. I was just thinking. I'm not sure what we got much of anything. Dews, heavy dews, maybe, and that was about it. But
it's been rough, especially after things were so lush because we got so much moisture early on. Everything was looking so beautiful in the beginning, and then, man, once we got into July.
And it's tough on plants because if they're grown really well and they put on all this leaf growth and suddenly, they don't have them, sometimes they just can't maintain that all that extra growth they put on in June. So sometimes you do see a little bit of dieback because of those kind of situations if they're not getting water.
Okay. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, and she's with us once a month, always on a Tuesday. Also, you can look for her occasionally on the show Illinois Gardener, WILL-TV, Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. Hey, thanks very much.
Thank you.